And we're holding on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ha'isha shenodra b'nazir, a woman made a neder of nazirus, v'ha'isha shoysa b'yayin matam l'meisim, if then she drinks wine or becomes tamei mes during her nazirus, ha'rezu sefega sesar boyim, then she gets malchus. Now, there's not that much of a chiddush in that. It's really more as an introduction to the next part of the Mishnah, which is what happens when her husband is mefer to her. So the Mishnah continues, hefer la baila. What happens if her husband then was mefer for her? V'hilo yodosh hefer la baila. She doesn't know that her husband was mefer, because we learned in Nedarim, the husband does have to say the words mufalich, but he doesn't actually necessarily have to say it in his wife's presence. So she doesn't know that he was mefer, but he did. V'hilo yodosh hefer la baila. V'hoysa shoysa b'yayin matam l'meisim. She drinks wine or she becomes tamei mes. Then she does not get malchus for that, because even though she meant to do badly, even though she meant to do an isser, the fact is there was no isser because her husband had been mevatel the nazirus. So we talked about yesterday, we talked about the last 2 days, the whole discussion of whether Meida's guy is whether Meida's guy is, whether he cuts off the neder, meaning that it existed at one point but now doesn't exist anymore, or whether Miyaka Oka, or whether he uproots it completely. But either way, the point is the Nazirus is gone now. Rabbi Yehuda Oimim, Enesefegas Saboyim, Kispeg Makas Maudus. Rabbi Yehuda says, granted, maybe she's not getting Malchus, Midaraisa, because the fact is she wasn't over on an Isra after all, Kispeg Makas Maudus, but at least she should be getting Makas Maudus, which is lashes derabanan, because the fact is she meant to be over an isser. There are, in fact, the Tosfos earlier on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis seems to imply that maybe Rabbi Yehuda is not even necessarily disagreeing with the Chachamim. He's more clarifying. He's saying, I agree that in this case there's not I agree, but he's saying you should know that don't think when the Tanakhama says that there's no malchus means she gets away scot free. There is going to have to be some kind of consequence. Other Mephoshim learn that in fact they're arguing. Part of it maybe depend on that point before of whether Miyaka Oka or Mega's guy is, because again, if we say Mega's guy is, which is how we said in the end, that the husband cuts away the neder from now on, but it existed until now, the fact is until now there existed a neder, and therefore there should be some kind of consequence for having violated it. So the Gemara says, Tanna Bonan, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Isha haferam v'Hashem yislach la, her husband had vetoed, had canceled the neder, and Hashem will forgive her. So what is it? What does Hashem have to forgive her for? It means, Be'isha shehefer la baila v'hiva yada akos v'madabra. The Pasuk is talking about a woman, like this case of the Mishnah, where she made the neder of Nazirus or some other, or it doesn't matter, Nazirus, any kind of neder, her husband canceled it, v'hiva yoda, and she didn't know about it, because medaber is what the pasuk talking about, she tzricha kapora uslicha, so she still needs kapora and forgiveness from Hashem, because she meant to do badly, because we're talking about, again, where she violated her neder, thinking that it's still a neder, and it turns out it wasn't a neder after all. So the Gemara continues, when Rabbi Akiva would reach this pasuk and learn it, he would cry and he would say, think of the implications of it. Somebody who, as in this example, meant to pick up a piece of chazer flesh, and in the end, he ends up picking up a piece of sheep meat, which is kosher, ton kaporo slicha. Nevertheless, the implication is that he needs kaporo slicha, because that's what we're saying. In effect, that's what she did over here, is that she thought she was being over on an isser, and it turns out that she was not. So then if somebody actually intends to pick up the chazir and he actually picks it up and eats it, Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so that he needs forgiveness from Hashem, because not only there he intended to do the Avera, he actually did it. So it's a deep point, in other words, and there is actually a point. The Meiri makes a point. The Meiri, besides for his Pirush on Gemara, he also wrote a sefer called Chibur HaTshuva, which is all about how about Tshuva. What is it exactly? So he points out, like this, in the first example of the Chazer versus Tleh, don't we usually say machshava ra ein hakadosh baruch hu metzar for the ma'aseh, that Hashem doesn't consider a bad thought as the equivalent of or as the equivalent of a bad deed? The difference is here there was an actual ma'aseh. It just turns out it was a ma'aseh that was actually mutter in the end. But here we're talking about that she in Rabbi Akiva's example, he thought to do an avera and actually did something towards that goal, except it turned out that it was that they picked up the wrong thing or that they did the wrong thing. So therefore, that's what we're saying. It needs real slich of a kapara. There is a very interesting point, by the way, that Rabbi Yosef Engel makes in Gilyon HaShas. Why of all the Tanoim did Rabbi Akiva particularly cry when he got to this point? And this is a very interesting point. We know that Rabbi Akiva was eventually one of the Asar Harugei Malchus, and we know that the whole thing happened with them because of the sale of Yosef. We say it in the Piyutim on Musaf of Yom Kippur. Now, when you think about it, the brothers of Yosef was this kind of thing. They meant to do very badly to Yosef. What does Yosef tell them afterwards, after at the reunion in Parshas Vayigash? He says, it's not you. Hashem planned the whole thing. It's all for good, that Mitzrayim and the whole world should be saved from famine, etc. And yet, where they need slich of a kapara, and that ended up being that kapara, part of it ended up being the Asara Arugei Malchus. So Rabbi Akiva is crying at that, realizing that is why he's going to end up being one of the Asara Arugei Malchus as a result of them, to use his metaphor, trying to pick up chazer flesh and actually, in fact, picking up a piece of kosher meat. Continues the Gemara. Kayotze b'davar ata omer. In a similar vein, you have a different pasuk that expresses a similar point. In the case of an oshem toluy. So the case of an oshem toluy is a person is not certain whether he did something which is an isur kores. And we're going to talk about soon what the exact scenario is. So then, if he knew for sure that he had done this isur, he would be bringing a chatas. But because he's not sure, then he brings an oshem toluy, and it sort of covers him and saves him from yisurim until he actually finds out. If he ever actually finds out that he actually did an isur that would have made him chayav chatas, then he brings the chatas as well. So the pasuk expresses it, v'lo yada v'oshem, he didn't know, and he was guilty, meaning he didn't know for sure whether he's guilty, but nevertheless, we consider him guilty. V'nosa avonah, and he bears his sin, and therefore he has to bring the korban. Same kind of thing. Ma mishin eskavim l'alas b'yadim sar tleh. Again, madach, somebody who intended to pick up sheep meat. Or here it's the other way around, actually. He intended to pick up sheep meat. He intended to pick up something which is mutter. And instead he picked up chazir, kigoin, for an example, chaticha safek shos shuman safek shochelam. For example, you have a piece of meat in front of him, which he's not sure whether it's shuman, which is fat, that is mutter, or chelav, which is also, and which would be chayav kores and chayav fatas. And still omakrov and nosa avoyna, and still the pasuk says that he bears his guilt, meaning the case, Rabbi Akiva is understanding that the case of the oshem toluy doesn't require that. Now you're going to have soon, we're going to talk about the concept of shtei chatichas. You may have two pieces in front of you. One is chelev and one is shuman, and you're not sure which is which, and you ate one of them. Rabbi Akiva is saying that's not necessary. You can even have one piece which itself there's a suffix on, whether it's heter or osir, and then the person ate it, thinking that after all it was mutter, and it turns out that now he's not sure, it may have been osir. And still the pasuk says omakrov nosa avoynoi, and still the pasuk says he'll bear his guilt, because after all, objectively, he did something wrong. What he ate may in fact have been chelev. So then again, mishin eskavim malas biyadim sar chazir. If a person intends to do an isur to eat chazir, but all of biyadim sar chazir, and he actually does end up doing it, alach is kama v'kama. How much more so that he needs a kapara from Hashem? Isi ben Yehuda, Omer. Then Isi ben Yehuda says it a little bit differently, because he holds that the scenario for an oshem toluy has to be a little different. Again, so he says, again, let's start with the same metaphor. Madach, somebody who intended to pick up sheep meat, and instead he picked up chazir. And the scenario would be not like Rabbi Akiva's case, where you have one piece, which might be one, might be the other, but rather For example, a person has two pieces in front of him. One of them was chelev, one was shuman. And meaning, in other words, at one point we knew which was which. And he picked up one of them, and he picked up one of them, and he ate it. And he picked up one of them, and he ate it. And now he's not sure which one it was. And yet, and yet the pasuk says that he bears his guilt. So Isi ben Yehuda holds, and this is in fact the halacha, that you only chayev an oshim tolo only if it's what's called ikba isura, only if there's an object there that you know was osur. So if you have it, Rabbi Akiva's scenario where you have a thing that might have been osur, might have been mutter, only one piece, you don't even know whether there was any chaylev over there, then you wouldn't bring an oshim tolo for that. Only when you know that one of the pieces, is in fact osur, you just forgot which one it was. And it could even be, before we should talk about, let's say you could have, I thought I recognized this one and that's why I ate it. And nevertheless, it turns out that now afterwards, you're not sure. And the pasuk is saying menosa avoyno. So he continues, hamiskaven laalos biyadim sar chazir v'olam biyadim sar chazir. So then, if a person intends to do the avera of eating chazir, and he actually does, alach haskama v'kama, how much more so that he needs a kapara from Hashem. And the braisa finishes off. The braisa finishes off. Al davarze yidvu hadoyvim. People who feel bad about things, people who have the sensitivity to feel bad, the word dova actually means sick, about such things should in fact feel bad about this kind of thing, realizing how strict Hashem's standards are for us, that not only is it important what a person does, but also what he intended to do, and vice versa. Not only is it important what he intended to do, but even if he inadvertently did the wrong thing. Tosfos, in fact, points out why does the Braisa use this unusual expression yidvu adovim? Because the word yidvu is actually an abbreviation for the key words of the pasuk we just quoted. Yoda v'oshem v'nosa. He knew and he's guilty and he bears his guilt, and therefore he brings the oshem tolo. So we have a few different examples. We have the example of this woman who made a neder of nezirus, and her husband vetoed it. We have the various cases involving chaylev and shuman. So the Gemara goes through v'chol hani lomali. Why do we need all of these examples? Why does the Braisa have to give three different examples? So the answer is tzrichim. We need all of them. The itona gabi, and the fact is, okay, when it comes to the actual oshim tolui, it's true. There's a machloikus between Rabbi Akiva and Isi ben Yehuda whether it's enough to have one piece or whether you need two pieces in order to bring an oshim tolui. Fine, but the actual lesson, the actual hara we can learn from it is equally valid either way, whether the person is technically bringing an oshim tolui or not. Either way, the pasuk can say on him, "Benasa avonoi." Just in one case, he can be mechaper on it with an oshem tolui, and in the other case, maybe not. So, why does the braisa have to bring all of them? Or, for that matter, the braisa brings two, and the mishnah. Well, the braisa started off with the example of our mishnah with the woman who had made a neder of nezirus and her husband canceled it. So, the most is tzrichin. We do need all of them. The itona gabi isha, because if it was said only by a woman, by the case of the nezirus. You would say, you know why she needs this forgiveness and pardon from Hashem. Because after all, she did blatantly mean to do an Isser. The fact is, she, as far as she knew, her Nezirus is still fully in effect, and she's going and drinking wine or doing whatever anyway. But when you have a piece of meat that might be chaylev and might be shuman, you could argue, after all, that he meant to do the right thing. He truly didn't know there was a suffix on it. He ate it. Only afterwards does he realize there was a suffix on it. So loy boy kaparo slicha. Maybe you would say that he doesn't need kaparo slicha. And yet the Braisa points out, the Tanakama of the Braisa points out that nevertheless, yes, a person does need kapara and slicha for that as well. Even though he meant heter, the fact is what he ate may have been isur. The itmar hodah, and if you only had that case, you would say the ike isura. The fact is, okay, because you have an isur over there, because you have something which may actually be usur. Therefore, he needs kapara or slicha. You should have been more careful you should have been more careful to consider that this thing may be also. Aval isha de hefer la baila, but when it comes to the woman whose husband was made for her, de hetera, where after all it turns out it is completely mutter. There's no issue left. Because again, we're not talking about the case where the first part of the Mishnah, where when she became Tomei, then she gets Malkus. Because her husband hadn't been made for her yet. We're talking about the husband was already made for before she became Tomei or drank wine or whatever. So there is, in fact, now when we find out the facts, we find there really is no issue over here at all, unlike the piece, Suffolk Chalev, Suffolk Shuman, where there's always that doubt hanging over it, whether maybe it was us. So in the case of the woman, you would say loyti poi kaparo slicha. Maybe she doesn't need kaparo slicha, and therefore the Mishnah and the beginning of the Braisa tell us that nevertheless the pasuk is telling us that she does. The iit mahani tauti, and then if we only had these two, have amina hani tauti the sagi lahoin be kaparo slicha. You know why? Just the opposite. You could say those two, fine, kaparo slicha is enough because in a way it's not so serious. Dele ikba isura. There's no fixed issue in place over there. In the case of the woman, it turns out there was no issue at all. In the case of the Suffolk piece, maybe it was also, maybe not. But in Isi ben Yehuda's example, where you have two pieces, one chelev, one shoman, the ikba isura, and there was a clear issue over there, because after all, one of the pieces definitely was usur. And he knew that one of them was osur. He just got careless and thought, I can recognize which is which. And then he eats one of them, and then he realizes afterwards, you know what? Maybe I misidentified it. So you would think maybe lo sagi lo be kaparo slicha. Maybe kaparo slicha is not enough. Maybe he needs, or maybe even a korban is not enough for him. Maybe he needs something more than that. It's very close to mazid at that point. Kamash malan lo shna. Therefore, the braisa is telling us there's no difference even in that case. Even in that case, an Oshem Toloi will accomplish a kapara for him, at least a provisional kapara. Again, if he ever finds out that it really was Chelev, the piece that he ate, then he's going to bring a Chatas, but that's a different matter. But as long as you have that suffix, then yes, the Oshem Toloi will cover him. So therefore, we need all those three cases. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to go into talking about this point. So
there, yeah. It's like chronological in the order.
Chronological in the order of what?
The Mishnah into, I guess, the
Braisa? I mean, Braisa sometimes were composed, some Braisas were composed after the Mishnah to explain it. Many of them were composed simultaneously with the Mishnah. Many times you have that there were different versions of teachings of Tanoim that were floating around in different Bate Medrash, and Rebbe picked one of them, usually Rebbe Meir's version, and made that the Mishnah, and all the other ones then it turned out to be that became Braisis. But it could be either way. This one, usually a lot of times when the Gemara begins Tanur Rabbanon, it's actually a Braisa that comes from when it starts Tanur Rabbanon, it means that it comes from an authoritative collection of Braisis, meaning sometimes you have like individual Braisis that were floating around, and sometimes even the Gemara will say on them there's a mistake in them or something. Tanur Rabbanon means that it comes from a reliable collection of Braisis. Usually when a braisa starts with a pasuk, like this one did, many times it comes from the Midrash Halacha on those psukim. Sifra, if it's from Vayikra, Sifri, if it's from Midbar Dvarim, Mechilta, if it's from Shmois. I haven't looked it up, but very likely this one that begins with a pasuk is very likely from Sifri on the pasuk. In which case, I mean, Sifri was assembled by Rab in the generation after Rebbe, in the generation after the Mishnah was written. But again, the material in it goes back long before him.
I'm saying the Gemara doesn't do the opposite direction, like, oh, if you had the Braisa, then would you have needed the Mishnah?
No, it doesn't do that because the Mishnah always tells us it briefly, and then the Braisa expands on them. So here, for example, the Mishnah is just telling us the fact that she doesn't get Malkus, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying she should get Makas Maudus. The Mishnah is not even telling us anything about the Kaparo Slicha that she needs in this case. The Braisa is what gives us all that detail. But that's usually how it is. The Mishnah will tell us a din briefly without giving us the source and the pasuk, without giving us any outgrowths of it, or whatever, and then a Braisa will come and teach that act. Okay. So now then we talked about this point about that not only a person's actions are important, but a person's kavana is important. Because we're saying over here, for example, this woman, it turns out her actions, there was nothing wrong with them because the neder was already canceled, but nevertheless, she needs kapara because she meant to do bad. And the same thing with the other one. So now let's talk further about this point about the importance of kavana in a person's actions. My dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk, the last pasuk of Hosea, ki yeshorim darchei Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straight, the tzaddikim yelchu bam, the tzaddikim walk in them, ufoshim yikosh luvam, and the sinners stumble in them. So what is the pasuk, what are the implication seems to be that there can be the exact same thing that the tzaddikim and the rishoyim do, but the tzaddikim are going in the way of Hashem and the rishoyim are stumbling over it. So what is it? So moshel l'shnei bnei adam shetzolu as pischeihim. We can make a moshel of two people who both roasted their korbanos Pesach and are going to eat it. Echad ochle l'shum mitzvah, the echad ochle l'shum achila gasa. One of them ate it in having in mind the mitzvah. About the beginning of the widest lines. And the other one eats it, as achila gasa. Now, Tosfos points out here and in some other places that there are actually different kinds of things that the Gemara uses the word achila gasa for. Achila gasa means overeating. But there can be two possibilities. One is that a person is full, but not absolutely stuffed. He can eat, but it's not as comfortable for him because he's already full. No need to eat, but he still is able to eat. And then you have a person where he's eating and Pashat, he's revolted by the sight of food. He's eaten so much that he can't even look at food. And if he forces it down, then so Tosfos points out that kind of thing can't really be called eating. So therefore, that we wouldn't be talking about over here, because if he eats it as that second kind of achila, so over here, when we talk about achila gasa, we mean the first kind. He's full already. He overfilled himself on the meal beforehand, which he shouldn't have done. In fact, that's why you have on Erev Pesach, you're not supposed to have in general on Erev Yom Tov, you're not supposed to have a soda late in the day. So this person didn't do that. He ate more than he should have. Now, when it comes to the Korban Pesach, he feels very full, but not so full that food is nauseating to him. So now he eats the Korban Pesach, but nevertheless, he's still, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he's still accomplishing the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach because it can be called eating. As opposed to, it's supposed to be eaten ala soiva. It's supposed to be eaten that you, no, not when you're full already. It's supposed to be eaten that you fill up on the Korban Pesach. It's supposed to be you eat beforehand. You have, for example, you have the Korban Chagiga together with it in most years. You eat some of the Chagiga, then you eat the Korban Pesach, and that's the last thing you eat. And that way, you've filled yourself up. And the last thing you ate to fill yourself up was the Korban Pesach, which is why we do the Afikoman now instead of that. Interesting point, actually, the Mordechai mentions at the end of Pesachim that he brings that in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, they used to have, obviously they had the Seder in a different order than we do because they had the Korban Pesach in it, but he actually says that they'd actually do Shulchan Aruch earlier in the Seder. They'd do the Haggadah, then they'd do Shulchan Aruch, which includes the Korban Pesach, which includes the Chagigah, and only then would they eat Matzah and Morer on the Korban Pesach and the rest of that. So instead of we have Shulchan Aruch after Matzah, Morer, and Korach, he learned the Mordechai brings that they would have it beforehand. And he says the reason why eventually they changed that, not just because we don't have a Korban Pesach, but because people didn't know where to draw the line, where to stop at Shulchan Aruch, so that they have proper room for Matzah and Morer and Korban Pesach when there is one, and therefore they switched it around to do it the way we do. Anyway, the point is that Marsha also makes a point in a different Gemara, which also brings this point, that if the person eats it as achila gasa of the second kind that Tosfos is describing, where you poshut can't stand the sight of food, you can't even call that eating. So if the posuk is implying that he and the tzaddik are doing the same thing, and Rish Lakish is and Rabbi Baba Chana rather is explaining that both of them are eating the Korban Pesach, then it has to be both of them are doing something that can be described in halacha as eating. So one ate at l'shem mitzvah and one ate at l'shem achila gasa. So zesh ochlo the shum mitzvah, the one who ate it for the sake of the mitzvah, good, but tzaddikim yochubam, he's the tzaddik who's going in the way of Hashem. The one who ate it in the wrong way, he's the sinner who stumbles in the way of Hashem. That even though he sinned by doing, he did badly by eating the Korban Pesach in that way.
Same
pasuk
is split in half.
Right, that's what we're saying. The ways of Hashem are straight. But tzaddikim yochuvam ufoshim yikosh luvam. The point is, in other words, it sounds like the tzaddik and the rasha are doing the exact same derech of Hashem, but their motivations are different, and the way they go about it is different. In fact, in connection with the idea, we're talking mainly about motivations over here. In fact, the Meiri learns over here that l'shem achila gasa doesn't even necessarily mean that he actually is eating it like Tosfos is saying, on a full stomach, but rather that he intends to just eat it as gluttonous eating. He's not thinking of the mitzvah. He's just thinking, ooh, this is a nice, good steak, and I'm going to eat it. Anyway, Omalei Rish Lakish, but Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yechanan, how could he say that? Hi, Rosha Karis Lake. How do you call the guy a Rosha or a Peshea? Nihi Deloi Ka'ovid Mitzvah Minam Mufcher. Fine, he's not doing the mitzvah in the best possible way. Pesach Mia Ka'ovid. The fact is, he has accomplished the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. There is the concept of mitzvah tzrichas kavana, fine, but you still have your yotze the mitzvah, even if you don't have that kavana. So, or even this example that he ate a lot, but he still can eat, then he's still yotze the mitzvah. It's not the ideal, but you can't call him poshim for that.
It's
machlokas whether mitzvah tzrichas kavana or not. Right. One point is there's different degrees of kavana. There's kavana to do the actual mitzvah. There's the general kavana to be fulfilling what Hashem wants.
We're passing.
I think that mitzvah ain't tzrichas kavana for most purposes. But even if tzrichas kavana, still the fact is he has the minimum kavana to eat this piece of meat. He's doing it for the wrong reasons. Mitzvah saying, if he thought that it was a piece of something else and he ate it, and it turns out that it was the Korban Pesach, maybe then you could say he's not Yotze. Maybe then you say he's lacking Kavanah altogether. That would be similar to, for example, there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that mentions that if a person eats matzah when he's crazy, if a person has attacks of mental illness or epilepsy or whatever, and eats matzah during that time, then he's not Yotze because he doesn't even have the das to eat matzah. Anyway, so Rish Lakish says you can't call the guy a Rosha just for not having the right kavana and for doing the mitzvah not in the best possible way. Ella, rather, Rish Lakish says, I'll give you a mashal to explain the pasuk. Mashal l'shnei b'nei adam, ze ishtoi v'achoyse imoi. One has his wife and his sister with him in the house. Ze ishtoi v'achoyse imoi. And the other one also has his wife and his sister in his house. Then each of them is going to have relations. One of them winds up going to his wife, which is a mitzvah, and the other one by accident goes into the wrong womb and ends up having relations with a sister. Zeshin is dam nalo ishto is the example of tzaddikim yochuvam, that he ends up having to have done the mitzvah of oinah. Possession is dam nalo achoisa, the one who winds up with his sister, is the example of a foshim yikosh luvam, that he's a sinner that stumbles. In other words, that Hashem
doesn't watch him.
Hashem doesn't watch him, that he was careless about it, and in fact, so again, he may not, he didn't mean to do an issur, but the fact is he did do an issur. So we're saying, in other words, and now why taka would that happen? So Marsha and Gemara is also in Hodias. So Marsha explains over there, you can say it can depend, in other words, Hashem can make it depend on their kavana. One of them intended to have relations with his wife, and therefore Hashem helps him out, and taka makes that happen. And the other one had intentions to do an aveira, and Hashem makes it possible that in fact he winds up in the wrong room and does the aveira. But the Gemara says, me dummy. Still, how do you compare it? How do you say that that's a good metaphor to explain the pasuk? Anan kamrin choda derech. After all, the expression in the pasuk is yeshorim darche Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straight, and then tzaddikim yochuvam uposhim yikosh luvam. The implication is that there's only that they're both doing the same thing. Hocha shnei derechim. And here you have two different ways. Each one had relations with a different relative. So a heter and isser, you would have to have where they're doing the exact same thing, but one is doing a mitzvah and the other one is doing an isser. So in Rabbi Yochanan's example, that would have worked because they're both eating the Korban Pesach, except for the fact that, as Rish Lakish points out, in that case, they really are both, after all, doing a mitzvah. Just one of them is doing a mitzvah minam muvcher, and the other one is not doing minam muvcher.
So even if he eats it without
the proper intention, or like a piece of meat or whatever, yeah, he's still yotze. Yeah, he's still yotze the minimum amount. Yeah. Ella. So rather, the Gemara says, "Moshe loy to shtei b'nois of imai." Rather, you can compare it. An example of the pasuk would be the example of what happened with Lot and his two daughters. Hench and his now in each time when his older daughter and then when his younger daughter had relations with him, it's the exact same maisa. The older one is involved with him and he's involved with her. And yet Hench and his scavna l'shem mitzvah, they intended it for a mitzvah because, as we know, they thought the whole world had been destroyed. So therefore we can say on them, but tzaddikim yochubam, so they're the tzaddikim who go in the right way. As opposed to Lot, who intended it for Avera, on him we can say that he's a sinner who stumbles in the way of Hashem. So the Gemara is going to ask how we know that he was a scavenger of Avera. Tosfos, by the way, points out that there is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you have a sugya over there that extends over a couple of block that deals with the details of Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. One of the points is, it discusses over there, which arayas are also to Bnei Noach, and which ones are mutter. And there's an opinion over there, and I think this is the end, the final halacha, that a goy is actually mutter to marry his daughter. You have the Rambam, Paskins, and Hilchos Malachim. There were only six arayas that are all in the end, that are also to a Ben Noach. Eshes Ish is one of them, his sister from his mother's side, his mother, a couple of others, whatever, but his daughter is actually not on the list. Nevertheless, Tosfos points out that we know that after the Umas Ha'olam fenced themselves in and said, you know, we realize the Mabul was brought about, among other things, because of rampant Znus, so we got to take steps to fence ourselves in. So even though it wasn't technically also to them, it was still generally accepted as an Isser. And yet we're saying that Lot intended to violate that Isser, and therefore Hashem Taka caused him that he ended up violating it.
This was... The accepting of this minhag happened after.
So it happened before. It happened after the Mabul, but the Mabul was 500 years before Lot.
Okay. You can just decide to make an Isser on yourself.
You, of course, a person. That's the whole Nedarim and Nazir is about a person making an Isser on himself. But especially when you have it's something that the Rabbim have accepted on themselves. And yeah, we're saying over here that it has the force of an Isser on the individual. Yeah.
There's differences about what the chumrot are and what the.
There is such a thing as minig tos, for example, sure. But on the whole, we say minig yisrael torah. We say, for example, that a minig of a community is generally binding on that community to the extent of a neder, to the extent that if you want to start doing differently, then you have to be matu neder, and sometimes you can't even be matu neder. But
I'm saying, and it's not so relevant. But if you have, let's say, the arayas that are considered the real arayas, then that's high misa. I mean, I don't know what the halachas are regarding.
No, so when it comes, right.
But if it's a neder, it's not the same.
Right. No, but nevertheless, right. You know, you have, for example, you have a sicha where the Rebbe talks about in this connection about Yaakov marrying two sisters. How did he do that? And you have all the different answers from Mefarshim, and the Rebbe says that the ultimate answer is that it really was mutter at that point because Yaakov has the din of a ben noach. He wanted to be machmir on himself. Very well, he can be machmir, but only when it doesn't impinge on a more serious issur, which is he promised Rachel that he's going to marry her, and therefore he has to marry her no matter what, even if that means setting aside his personal chumrah in favor of, again, this would be an example, though, to lie, to break a promise is not technically one of the Shev Mitzvahs Reinoyach, but again, it was something that was generally accepted by the population at large. You see that Yaakov is able to call Lavan on it, have Lomar Rimi Sani. Why doesn't Lavan answer? What do you mean, Lomar Rimi Sani? There's no issue in it. It's not one of the Shev Mitzvahs Reinoyach. The answer is, because that civilized society required that you keep your word. So Yaakov has to hold himself to that also. And if that means overriding his personal chumrah about two sisters, then he's going to have to do that.
That same sikha said that if he wouldn't marry, then that Esau would have...
Well, it's also true that Esau would have married Rachel, but that's a whole other matter. Right. But yeah. Okay, going on.
Hakol Kaminim Medina, we learn all the Gemaras. A lot of times it says Hakol Kaminim Medina.
Hakol Kaminim Medina.
You go one place, have one in there.
Right, so there's no question. Once the Torah was given, for example, then you have 20 Arayas that are also, then there's no playing games with that. Then something is also, it's also, and there's no, I'm doing it for a higher purpose. We're going to actually talk about on Omid Beis. We're going to talk about Yoel with Sisera. There is the rare concept of Avera Lashma. But that's not a blanket. That's not a blanket heter. Obviously, that's unique case in Jewish history, as we'll talk about on Omid Beis. But once the Torah was given, then there's no playing around with this. You can't say the Torah asks me to marry two sisters, but this is an exception, and I'm going to do that because after all, the Torah asks it to you. But here we're talking about before Matan Torah, when it wasn't technically also to them. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara asked, "But Dilma, who nami the shum mitzvah ikaven?" Yeah, but how do you know? Maybe he also intended for the mitzvah. Maybe he also thought the whole world was destroyed. And the answer is Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan says, if you look in the story of Lot earlier in the story, you'll see that kol ha'posuk hazeh shem aveira nemar. When it says before that Avraham had asked him in Parshas Lech Lecha, please separate from me and you go your way and I'll go mine so that our shepherds don't keep fighting and then you grazing in people's fields or whatever. So he the Pasuk says he looked and saw Sdoim and decided to settle there. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Kol ha-posuk al-zeh Hashem Aveira Nemer. Every phrase in that Pasuk is meant to hint to Aveira. And in Gemara terminology, Aveira, unspecified, often means Znus. So in other words, Lloyd's real motivation for settling in Sdoim was not because it's a rich land, as the Pasuk says over there, and because there's plenty of pasture for his flocks and so on and so forth, but because it's a place of Znus, and he wanted to be able to enjoy that.
Well, he's a Brahmin that can do what I want.
Pretty much, yeah. And so the point is, in other words, because otherwise the Pasuk is extra. Why does it need to tell the Pasuk? So what happens? Avraham tells Lloyd, separate from me. What happens? The Pasuk says, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the whole valley of the Yarden, it was all well-watered, etc., and Lot picked Sdoim. Now, why do we need that Pasuk? It's enough to say that Avraham tells Lot, separate from me, and Lot chose to live in Sdoim. Why the Pasuk by Yisai Lot the same? So Rabbi Yochanan is telling us, because it shows us his motivations, each phrase in it hints at Znus. Let's go through the Pasuk. Nema Vayisa Lot. The Pasuk says, Lot lifted up his eyes, and corresponding to that, you have, by Potiphar's wife, that Potiphar's wife lifted up her eyes to Yosef and wanted to be mezanin with him. So therefore, the Vayisa Lot, the same thing, implies that he had the same kind of intentions. When it continues, S-A-Nav, when it says that Lot lifted up his eyes, for that you have the parallel pasuk with Shimshon, where he says about a plishti girl that he wants to marry, kihi yoshra be'enai, she is upright in my eyes. Now fine, Shimshon had good motivations over there. He wants to hide among the plishtim and pretend like he's one of them and then harass them from the inside. But nevertheless, the Mishnah and Sota and the Gemara there tell us that he still spoke wrongly by saying she's upright in my eyes. In other words, it's my decision rather than you should have attributed it to Hashem.
Also an Avera.
So that's not really an Avera Lishma. The Rambam stresses that Shimshon was Megayer. The point is, though, he should have been more careful to check out her true motives for becoming this Geyer. In the end, we see in the Pesukim over there that she still felt more of a kinship with the Plishtim. You have the whole thing over there with Shimshon's riddle, where she wormed the secret out of him and told it to the Plishtim, and then she ended up marrying a Plishti herself, even though, remember, she's already a married woman, she's already married to Shimshon. So we see that to begin with, her Geyrus was not motivated by the right reasons that Amram says. That's why the Pasuk makes it sound as though Shimshon married a Goita, but in fact he was Megayer. So there wasn't an actual issue. Anyway, so the S-A-Nav by Lot goes together with Kihi Yoshra Be'enai, so it shows, in other words, again, that there's an element of Znus over there. Next, when it continues Vayar, when it says he saw the whole valley of Sdoim, that goes with Vayar is a Shechem and Hamer, when Shechem saw Dina and kidnapped her and raped her. When it continues as Kol Kikar HaYarden, he saw the entire valley of the Yarden. The word Kikar literally means something round. So there it means the round valley of the Yarden. But we also find the word Kikar can also mean a round loaf of bread. And you have a pasuk, Ki ba'ad isha zona ad Kikar lochem. Because of an isha zona down to a loaf of bread. In other words, the pasuk is your Shlomo is warning a person, don't get involved with a zona because you're going to end up spending a huge amount of money on her, on others like her. You're going to wind up being down to your last loaf of bread.
Make you poor,
yeah.
Doesn't mean square?
No, kikar doesn't mean square. It means, literally, it means round. The point is the word kikar is used for a valley and also for a loaf of bread. And when it continues, ki chula mashke, when he sees that the entire valley of Sdoim was well-watered, the word mashke goes with a pasuk that Hosea compares the Jewish people to a woman who's mezana after she's married to her husband, the same way the Jewish people are being mezana and worshiping Avodah Zarah. And he says that the Jewish people are saying, El ha'achre ma'ahavai, let me go follow my lovers, meaning the Avodah Zarah, noisne lachmi umeimai, who are the ones who give me my bread and my water, samri ufishti, my wool and my linen, Shamni, my oil, shikuyai, and my drink. So the word shikuyai is the same shodosh as mashke. So therefore, when it says that Lot saw that the whole area was mashke, means it's implying that he was thinking of the kind of drinks that are associated with znus. So we see that Lot all along had that kind of motivation, and therefore now when his daughters did what they did, then we can't say that Lot had pure motives. Okay, the Gemara asks, well, Manas honest. The fact is, though, he was onus. They gave him to drink And in fact, in halacha, you have, there's a concept called shichrusa shaloit, that if a person is so drunk as loit that he doesn't know what's going on, then he's actually, he's like a shoita. He's potter at that point from all mitzvahs. Yeah, and then the pasuk says, lo yada b'shichlo v'kuma. But the answer is, tonem mishum rab yosi barav choyni, lomo nokod avav uvakuma shal b'chira. So you have by the older daughter, it says, he didn't know when she lay down and when she got up. But there's a dot in the Sefer Torah over the second vav of Avkum. Why? The dot always tells us the darshan in something in the word. Loimar, it tells us, it tells us he didn't know when she went to sleep with him, fine, because she because he was drunk. But in the morning, when she got up, he knew. He realized that she's getting out, and he had either it means he actually had some kind of dim memory of what happened, or at least that he realized she's getting up. Why was she laying with me last night? He should have realized that something happened. So the Gemara asked, okay, well, my havelah lemeb. Okay, at that point, what could he do? My have a habit, it's a done deal. The answer is not yet. Rashi mentions that on the pasuk, comes from this Gemara. Nafkamina, the lapanya achrina, lo yiboy lemishti chamra. So the second night, he shouldn't have drunk. The fact that the second night they could give him the drink and he had no problem with it, even though he should have realized at this point, and the dot on the vav of Akuma tells us that he had some kind of memory of what happened, and nevertheless, he has no problem drinking wine, even though realizing the same thing could happen again, shows that therefore he didn't mean Ludvar Mitzvah at all, he meant Ludvar Abeira, therefore he can be described as the Poshim Yikosh Luvam. By the way, Marsha elsewhere mentions an interesting point. We know when it comes to Amun and Moav, which are the two nations that come from their children, the men are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people ever, even ad dirt asiru la yovelev kalashem. But the women are mutter, like Rus and like Nama Amonis. That goes all the way back to how these two nations came into being. The women, Loit's daughters, meant l'shem shemayim. The man Loit did not. He meant the Dvar Aveira. Therefore, that comes out in their future descendants that the men are one thing and the women are something else altogether.
Is there a difference between the two nations alone?
Within the two nations themselves, I mean, you know, there's no difference in foreign as far as halach. What you do have is the Gemara is going to point out soon that there is a certain way in which the older daughter did better than the younger one, and a certain way in which the younger one did better. We're going to talk about it in the Gemara later. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Dorash Rava, talking more about Loit, Rava Darshan, the Pasuk says, "My dichtib." What is the meaning of the Pasuk? What is the meaning of the Pasuk in Mishlei? Och nifsha mikiryas oiz, a brother who rebels against the sworn city, umidyonim, and then there's arguments and fights, kivriach amon, like the bolt on the door of a palace. So the simple meaning of the pasuk means just that. In other words, that you have a person who he was a brother, he was in a sworn city, and he decided to rebel and go his own way. So now it ends up being that there's a permanent rift between him and the people of the city. As if like he was barred with a kind of strong bar that you would have to lock the gate of a castle. But what is that pasuk referring to? Och nifsha mikiryas oiz, the first half, the brother who rebels against the strong city. Ze loit shepirash me Avraham. That refers to Loit, who was called. Avraham called him Ach. He calls him Anoshim Achim Anach. We're like brothers. He was actually Avraham's nephew, but a nephew can be considered like a brother. So he's like a brother. He's like an equal to Avraham in a certain way. But Shapirash me Avraham, but he rebelled against Avraham and went and settled elsewhere. Where the word oiz means strength. Elsewhere you have the pasuk describes Avraham Avinu as Tsur Chutzavtem, the rock from which we Jewish people were carved out. So therefore Avraham can also be described metaphorically in this pasuk as a strong, powerful city. And Loit voluntarily decides to leave him. Now, in other words, because, I mean, Avraham is telling him, please go away. But Loit could have told him that, no, I can't bear to be away from you. Fine, I'll make sure my shepherds in the future behave themselves. He could have said that at least I want to live someplace close by. And no, we're saying that he just decided, you know what, good. I don't need, as Rashi mentioned on the pasuk over there, I don't need Avraham. I don't need his God. Yeah. So he left. And the result is, midyonim kivriach armon, the result is that there's a rift, a fight, like the bolt of a castle, meaning shehito midyonim kivrichen ba'armon, he made a rift between his nations and the nation of Abraham forever, kivrichen ba'armon, like bolts and like a palace, like a castle, namely, la yovei amonim, that there's an issue for all time, that an Ammonium Moavi is not allowed to enter into the Jewish people, that men from them are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. So that was all caused by him leaving Avraham. Had he never left Avraham, then there wouldn't be this issur on his descendants. Now, to be sure, I mean, the Psukim over there in Parshas Kisetze, when they say the Isser, give a different reason for it. Al-Dvar Hashem l'kid mu'eschem alechem amayim, they didn't come out to greet you with bread and water, and Moav hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people. But still, the point is, all of these things factored in. Maybe you could say if Lloyd had never left, he never would have fathered those nations in the first place, because he wouldn't have been in a cave over there with his daughters thinking the whole world is destroyed. Or even if not, the point is, in other words, that you have many different factors that go into the issue on those nations. And the first factor was that Lloyd separated himself from Avraham and decided, I don't need Avraham and I don't need Hashem. So another drasha in this connection, Dorash Rava, the Itamer of Yitzchak, some say of Yitzchak Gaush in this one, my dichtiv, another pasuk in Mishlei says, this is actually the other pasuk that we just quoted is a pasuk further on in Mishlei Perak Yurches. This is the first pasuk of that Perak. Okay, Prakim, the divisions of Prakim were made by the Goyim long after Rava's times, but nevertheless, they're not that far apart. These psukim, they're about 20 psukim apart. Anyway, Pasuk says, "My dichtiv l'savo yivakesh nifrad." The one who separates himself wants taiva, wants his desires. Over chol tushia yisgala, and in every place of tushia, which literally means like good advice, yisgala, he is uncovered. So Pshuta Shomikra is that it means, for example, that you have, actually on the Pasuk explains over there, that you have a person who separates himself from Hashem, decides that he doesn't have to keep mitzvahs because he has taivas, and so in the end, the Chachamim end up seeing his embarrassment becomes publicized among all the Chachamim, the Chol Toshia, every place where people gather to learn Torah, Yisgala, he becomes uncovered, Yisgala with an ayin, similar to Yisgala with a hay, so it becomes uncovered, it becomes known what he did.
Ezra
means to help. No, I'm not sure. Tushia. Yeah, Tushia literally means good advice. Many times in Tanakh, if not always, it's used as a word for Torah. There's an expression in the Gemara elsewhere that Torah is called that because Mateshes Koicha Shel Adam, it weakens a person's strength, Begashmias, and strengthens in Beruchnias. But anyway. So what is this pasuk referring to? Again, it's telling us about Lloyd. L'saba yivakesh nifrad, the one who separates himself is demanding his taivas, zeh Lloyd. That refers to Lloyd. Because again, we said, why did he separate from Avraham? Is because he wanted. He saw what's going on in Sodom, and he wants to be a part of it. And the result is, v'chol tushia yisgala, means shenitzgala kloinoi v'votik nesias v'votim medrashis. His embarrassment is permanently revealed in the shuls and in the batim medrash, meaning in Torah shebichsab and in Torah shebal peh. So in Torah shebichsab, which is lain in shul, and Torah shebal peh, which is read in the Beis Medrash, which is learned in the Beis Medrash, in both of them, we have this point, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, in Yevamos, ammonium ayavi asurin v'isurin isur olam, that an ammonium ayavi are osur, and their isur is forever. Even if an ammoni becomes a ger, his great, however many times, great grandson is still also to enter into the Jewish people. This is a permanent thing that you have every time people learn Torah Shabbat and come across that pasuk, and every time they learn Torah Shabbat and come across that Mishnah and that Halacha, and then we have Lot's shame is revealed over and over again that this all happened because he separated himself from Avraham in order to go after his titus. By the way, we find Midrashim that the Ammonim and Moavim knew about this and they resented it very greatly. You have, in fact, the Medrash says that in the times of Shaul, you have the king of Ammon named Nachash Ammoni is threatening a Jewish city of Yabesh Gilad, and he threatens them that the only way I'm going to leave you alone and not massacre you and not kill you all is if you cut out your right eye. And Rashi brings over there from a Medrash that he's telling them, I want you to cut out of your Sifrei Torah this pasuk lo yaveh Ammoni umayavi. The upshot is that Shaul heard about it and brought an army and rescued them and defeated the Ammonim. Later on, you have at the time of the Churban also, it says that Yodei Poras Tzorak HaMachmadel, the pasuk says that the enemy stretched out his hand over all the precious things of the Jewish people. What's our most precious thing, the Torah? And so again, the Medrash explains that the Ammonim and Moavim were looking for every safer Torah that they could grab from the spoils of the Beis Hamikdash to cut out that pasuk. So you see how they knew about it and they resented it. And then, yeah, so we see that this is an eternal shame for them. Yeah. So the Gemara continues on this topic. Omar Ula, here again, let's get back to the point of a person's motivation in doing something. Omar Ola, Tomer Zinsa, Tomer was Mezane with Yehuda. She went and disguised herself as a Zona and seduced Yehuda. Okay, again, technically it was mutter before the Torah was given, but still it was a shameful thing to do, which is why Yehuda tried to cover it up.
Well, it was...
She was doing it for a good purpose. Yeah, that's the point that Gemara is going
to
make.
You said take her out and burn her. So
yeah, that's the point. In other words, it was obviously, well, no, that's because she was a Shemeres Yavam. That's another matter. But even just the way she went about it was something humiliating for Yehuda, but whatever. So she did that. And the Zimri, and Zimri Zina, and Zimri also was Mizana with Cosme. And yet there's a big difference. Tomer Zinsa Yotzimana Malachim Neviim. Tomer did it, but kings and Neviim descended from her. King David and Shlomo and that whole dynasty comes from her. And Neviim, because we find the Gemara mentions in Megillah that Omotz, the father of the Navi Yeshaya, was himself a Navi, and he was the brother of Amatzia, one of the kings of Yehuda. Which means that Yeshaya was actually a cousin of the kings of Yehuda. So of the following kings of Yehuda, Uzziah, Yosem, Achaz, Yechizkiah, who we said Nevuah in their times, he was their cousin. Anyway, the point is that all of them descended from Tamar as a result of what she did with Yehuda. Because she was taka doing it for the purpose of a mitzvah. On the other hand, Zimri Zina, but Zimri did it for the sake of an Avera, Noflol of Kamar of Avis Misrael, 24,000 Jews were killed because of him. So that's the point. In other words, you can have the same kind of action is done, but one person is doing the shame mitzvah and great things come as a result of it, and the other one is doing the shame avera and terrible things come from it. With Zimri and Cosby at the end of Parshas Balak over there, where he takes Cosby, a Midiani princess, and has relations with her, and Pinchas comes and kills them both. By the way, there are Sfarim, there are Sifrei Kabbalah that explain that maybe Zimri also had intentions of doing doing it for the good of accomplishing something. Beruchnius over there, it says in Asara Mamores or something, but he went about it the wrong way. Like this, when he does it publicly, and she's still a goita, and he publicly challenges Moshe. It's all derech like the chet etzadas, for example. If Adam and Chava, we know, had waited a couple more hours, then the fruit would have been mutter to them. The same way, if Zimri and Cosby had waited a little longer, then it would have been mutter, and he would have accomplished great things with it. But he jumped the gun. But so here we're saying he jumped the gun, and we're saying over here in the Gemara that he did it, that he and she did it for the sake of Znus, and the result was that many people were killed. So further in this connection, the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, gedola avera lishma mi mitzvah shaloi lishma." An avera that's done lishma, that's done for the sake of Hashem, which the Mefarish actually says l'shem mitzvah. That means that he's doing the avera for the sake of a mitzvah. Now, obviously, again, you know, you can't start doing hatarim from this, that therefore it means you can do any avera and claim it's l'shem mitzvah. That's, you know, the Shabbos Tzvinix, for example, did that. But it means that there can be this rare case where a person is doing something that on the face of it is an avera, but and he's doing it l'shma, he's doing it, for example, to save the Jewish people, as the example we're going to have with Yoel and Sisera, is greater than mitzvah shaloi l'shma, is greater than a mitzvah that a person does shaloi l'shma. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? A person should always occupy himself with Torah and mitzvahs, even if it's shaloi l'shma, even if he's doing it for improper motives. From doing it shaloi l'shma, he'll come to eventually doing it l'shma. And you have the expression that the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that mitoich also means within, because every yid deep down wants to do what the Eibishter wants. So mitoich within the shaloi l'shma is already the l'shma; it just has to be brought out. Tosfos mentions over here a point, which they also mention in a few other places in Shas, that there is a different Gemara in Brachas that says that if a person does mitzvah shaloi l'shma, noyach lo shel nivra, he would have been better off not being born. And so Tosfos makes the distinction here and in a few other places that there's a difference between different kinds of shaloi l'shma. The shaloi l'shma we're talking about in our Gemara over here is, for example, he wants to pride himself on it. He wants to become famous. He wants everybody to call him Rebbe. So it's not the best motive to be doing Torah and mitzvahs, but it's acceptable. The mitzvah is still a mitzvah. What we're talking about over there, Tosfos says, is where he's doing it lakanto, lakape, or here Tosfos uses the expression lakapeach acherim, to cut off others. So it can mean, in other words, for example, like to pride himself, and not just to pride himself, but to say, look how big I am and look what a nothing you are. It can mean, for example, let's say to use his Torah actually as a weapon against others, like to use knowledge of loopholes in Torah, for example, to cheat other people. It can mean different kinds of things like that, where a person is using the Torah itself in order to harm or insult or whatever other people. So that kind of thing, we're saying no yachshalei shalei nivra. That's not the lo'olam yasek shalei l'shma. But here we're talking about, he's doing it for selfish reasons. He wants to become famous. He wants to get his name out. He wants to get his name in the headlines or whatever. So it's not the best reason, but it's still acceptable. Anyway, the point is, so how can you say that an Aveda Lashmo would be greater than that? Ela Eimer, you're right. You have to say that Aveda Lashmo is kim mitzvah shaloi Lashmo. It's as great as a mitzvah shaloi Lashmo. Because the Maharal explains, each one has a Maila and a Chisorah, an Aveda Lashmo. There is an Aveda over there. But on the other hand, the Maila is you're doing a Lashmo. But it doesn't bring you to do another mitzvah. On the other hand, the mitzvah shaloi Lashmo, mitzvah gereres mitzvah. So the action itself was shaloi Lashmo. But at least though it was a mitzvah and mitzvah gereres mitzvah. So in that sense, then the Gemara says that they're both equal. Shtei and Shavus, the Mefarsh says. And how do we see this? Dichtiv, we can see this because you have a pasuk in connection with Yoel. So you have the story over there that the Jewish people are fighting against Sisera and his army. It's after a parashas Beshalach. So Sisera runs to Yoel's tent. He thinks that he'll be safe over there because Heber and Yoel have a peace treaty with Yovin and then Sisera. So he runs in there. He asks her to shelter him. She gives him milk to drink. Then when he falls asleep, then she takes a tent peg and then drives it through his head and kills him. So now, as the Gemara is going to point out in a few lines, she actually not only gave him milk, but she also, in order to weaken him so he'd fall asleep and not be able to do anything when she's killing him, she actually had relations with him multiple times. So that's an example of Aveda Lashma. It's an Aveda. She's a married woman, but it was Lashma. There is, I think, Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say that maybe, in fact, she wasn't even Jewish at all. She might have been Gioras Toshav, and in that case, then the rules are a little more relaxed. Or, I mean, there is the concept of Eishes Ish by Goyim as well, but maybe it's not as stringent. But most Mephoshim understand that she was, in fact, a Jewish woman. But this was an exceptional kind of thing. So, yeah.
They were Canaan.
They were descendants of Yisrael. They were the descendants of Yisrael. So we generally understand that the descendants of Yisrael became Gerim. Apparently, Rabbi Yaakov Emden is understanding that not all of them did. Apparently, some of them became Gerim and some of them remained Goyim and just became Gerim Tosha. Yeah.
This would be one letter that speaks about that she just laid there and it was.
That's, yeah, we're going to have that in a few lines. Yeah, we had it in Yuvamis as well months back. Yeah. Yeah. So Dichtiv, Tevorach, now later on when Devorah sings the Shira, she says, Tevorach minoshim Yoel Eishes Chever HaKeni, Yoel, the wife of Chever HaKeni, should be blessed from more than all the women. Minoshim ba'oil Tevorach, she should be blessed more than the women in the tent. Or minoshim can also mean from the women. She should get the same kind of bracha as they did. So man noshim sheba'oil, who are the women who are described in the tent? Sora Rifka Rocha V'Loya. Each of them, by each one of the imois, you have a pasuk that mentions their tent. So now, what's the point? What was the mitzvah shaloi lishma by each of them? So the mafarish over here says that each one of them told their husbands to marry a shifcha, Sarah, Rochel, and Leah, not Rivka, then in that case, we'd have to take out Rivka, Yitzchak never married a shifcha, but Sarah, Rochel, and Leah all told their husbands to take a shifcha, and they're doing it really, the mafarish says, because they're jealous one of another. So therefore, you can say, in other words, they're doing an avera. They're doing a mitzvah shaloi lishma. They're doing a mitzvah that there should be children, but they're doing it shaloi lishma. They're not doing it completely for the right motives, but rather because they're jealous. On the other hand,
like Sarah was jealous.
Sarah was just jealous that she didn't have not having children. You know, not Sarani Hashem Yiladis. She first got jealous, but yeah.
She got jealous. Right. When she went out.
Yeah, afterwards, when he married Hagar, then there were bigger problems, but yeah.
Jealous like she thought.
Maybe Avraham is not trying. Who knows, whatever. Anyway, elsewhere, Rashi and Tosfos explain a different point, which is in the Gemara and Yevamos, which is that all of them had relations with her husbands. Sure, they were doing it l'shem mitzvah in order to have children that would build up the Jewish people. But there is also, they're having hana in it as well. So therefore, it's not purely l'shma. On the other hand, as the Gemara is going to say on over here, Yoel did not have hana from Sisera at all. So therefore, in that sense, she's better than them. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Sheva Be'ilas Baal Oysa Rosha Ba'Oysa Shah. That Rosha Sisera had relations with her seven times at that point. Shenema, Bein Ragleha Koran Nofal Shocha. In the Shira over there, Devorah mentions seven expressions of him crouching down and falling down and so forth. The word Bein Ragleha, between her legs, refers to having relations. So, since you have seven expressions in the Pasuk, Koran Nofal Shocha, then it repeats again, Koran Nofal, etc. So therefore, we learn that it was seven times. So the Gemara asks, so the point is, in other words, that she seduced him into this way he'll be so weak that this way she can kill him and he won't be able to resist. So the Gemara asks, "V'hokam is hanya with the ilad delay?" Okay, but after all, isn't she having hanah from that? So how can we say that it's aveira l'shma and say that it's as great as, or maybe even according to the original thing, greater than an mitzvah shalai l'shma? The answer is, "Amar Rabbi Yechanan kol tayvosin shal rishoyim ena elad ra etz tzaddikim." Any good that the Rishoyim do, the Tzaddikim, like Yoel, consider that to be a bad thing. They don't get any Hanah from it. They don't get any Hanah from it. In fact, they're disturbed by it. Shenema, he's Shom Lacham, he Daber Im Yaakov, the Toi Vadra. We find by love, and Hashem tells him, don't speak to Yaakov, good or bad. So we have to ask, why not? B'shlem and Ra Shaper, of course, he shouldn't speak bad and threaten Yaakov or anything. Ela Toi Vamayloi, why should he speak to him good? Ela Lav Shmamina, Toi Vasa Rahi. It shows that even what he claims to be good is really bad. For one thing, because it means he's going to be swearing by his idols, as in fact we have later in the Psukim, and Yaakov would resent that. But so the same thing over here. In other words, she's not having any hana from what Sisera is doing at all, because Fakert, in fact, the Gemara mentions over there in Yevamos, that he brought a zuam, or he brought a ruchnistic of filth into her that as a result of that. So she didn't like it at all. So Shmamina, so therefore that proves that is why so she had no Hana at all, and therefore that's why the Pasuk is praising her so much, because it was an Aveira Lishma. Again, nobody has the right in later times to say, I'm gonna do this Aveira and I'll call it Lishma, but we should know that the concept exists. She saved all the Yidden with that, yeah. We'll continue this tomorrow,
Beth. We also have Esther.
Well, so in the case of Esther is an interesting point.